Hello everyone, welcome to the TriStar Gym channel. As usual, give me a quick sound check, give me those thumbs up, let me know the sound is loud and clear. And today we're going to be covering the Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier fight. Can't wait to talk about this fight. This was an incredibly close fight and I want to hear what you guys all have to say about it. As usual, give me that sound check and I'm going to give you my quick rundown, and then I want to hear everything you guys have to say about it. Muzi Buzz, thank you for giving me that thumbs up. I'm gonna need a couple more out there to let me know that the sound is working perfect. Audio sounds crisp, fantastic. Okay, let's get started, guys. I would hate to be a judge. I know we say this all the time, but this is one of those fights, man. What a hard fight to call. Round number one, I gave it to Daniel Cormier. He landed the better shots. He got a partial takedown. I wasn't very big on the takedown because Stipe was countering him with a guillotine. He got up. It was the knee that he landed when they were standing up that sold me on Cormier winning that round. The shots that Cormier landed, I didn't make such a big deal about the takedown. It was a nice attempt. I thought Stipe defended very well, but it wasn't a clear takedown for me. I felt that Cormier landed the better punches and some beautiful jabs, overhand rights, and he was very elusive. Miocic less busy. Round number one, I gave it to Cormier 10-9, but a close 10-9. Round number two, let's not forget there was also an eye poke in round one. Okay, Miocic gets eye poked again, like their first fight. Don't forget, this is their third fight, for those of you who are not familiar with this trilogy. In their first fight, Miocic gets blinded with a bad eye poke, and then soon later knocked out with an overhand right off a clinch. This time, the same kind of eye poke happened. Round ends. Miocic is still standing, and we're in round two. Now, in round two, I had Cormier winning the round until about the last 20 seconds or so. Miocic drops him with a cross, double cross, two right hands in a row, drops Cormier. It was kind of a stumble, but also Miocic was hitting him at the same time. Hard to tell. Was it solely because of the punches? Combination of running alongside the cage and getting tripped up, or was it strictly the punch that dropped him? Honestly, I have a hard time saying it, but you have to give it to Miocic. He stole the round. Not only did he knock Cormier down, he mounted him up against the fence. He landed some very strong ground and pound. Cormier was seated up against the fence with Miocic mounted on top of him. You have to give Miocic that round. Miocic stole the round. Up until then, I had Cormier winning the first two rounds. But the last 20, 30 seconds of round two, I felt that Miocic stole it. Now I got it 1-1. Going into the third, this time I have Miocic winning. Miocic landed some nice body shots, clinching into the body shot. Overhand right, some nice combinations. Close round, but you see that DC's kind of taking it easy. He's kind of coasting a little bit. I think he's trying to get ready for rounds four and five. And you definitely see Miocic land the bigger shots. Now, at the end of that round, at the end of round three, Cormier gets a massive eye poke, like a horrible eye poke. And I missed it live. I only saw it on the replay. On the replay, you see that Cormier gets eye poked really, really bad. He's sitting on the stool. His eye is swelling up. He's headed into the fourth, pretty much with his left side blinded. What happens? It's a close round, man. Round four was such a hard round to call. During the fight, Cormier was landing some beautiful jabs, man. Some beautiful, beautiful jabs. He's the shorter guy, but he was the quicker guy. He had the lesser reach, but he was faster. He landed some beautiful jabs, but got caught with a few right hands. Now we're thinking, everybody's got to be thinking, he's going to get hit hard with that right hand because he's blind on his left side. His left side is like no bueno. And we all watched the replay right before the start of round four, and you see him get grossly poked in the eye. But DC wins round four. I gave DC round four. Now I'll tell you something. I could understand everybody. A lot of people are going to be giving Miocic round four. It was close. A lot of people are probably going to say that Miocic was walking forward and this and that. I still had Cormier winning, but by a hair. So round four, look, I can go either way. So far, I got 2-3 for Miocic, 1 for Cormier, and 4 for Cormier. So it's 2-2. It's all going into the fifth. Now, the fifth was, again, super difficult to call. This is too hard of a fight to call. But Miocic was a little more aggressive, a little more busy, and he had a little bit more cage time. He was a little bit more aggressive. I wouldn't have complained one bit if the fight was called a draw. But it felt to me like Cormier was a little bit, he was fading a little more. So I gave it to Miocic. At the end, when it was all said and done, I had a 3-2 to Cormier with a questionable round four. I would understand that some of you would have it 4-1 for Miocic. But that wouldn't do justice to the fight. It would seem like it was an easy win. It wasn't. It was won by a hair. This fight on Saturday night was either a draw or won by a hair in favor of Miocic. And now I saw it as Miocic won, but really by a hair. Now, I got to tell you guys, I was hoping DC would win this fight. Like, if I had to choose the winner of this fight, I didn't get to do a pre-fight analysis, I would have probably gave it... I was thinking about doing one, and I wanted to try to find the time. I was going to give it 51-49 Cormier, only because they're in a bit of a smaller cage, and maybe that's going to give Cormier a slight advantage, but I had it really, honestly, a 50-50 fight. Their first battle, Cormier knocks him out. Their second battle, Miocic stops Cormier. Third battle, these guys are equal is what I'm trying to say. Third battle, it's won by a hair, or even maybe it could have been really honestly a draw, guys. That's how I see it. Too hard to call this fight. I don't think we'll ever see a part four. Guys, tell me, who do you think won this fight? No way it's a draw. That's from Frank Martin. Frank Martin thinks it wasn't a draw. Mozy Booz says me too. I think he believes it was a draw. Kevin Fregoso is calling for barbecue. Miocic is the better fighter. That's from Steven S. I wouldn't say... Look, he won that night. He was the better fighter that night. I think Cormier's like 40... I don't know, 40, 41. I think all in all, we're going to have to wait to see who's the greater fighter, you know, in terms of legacy and career, because Miocic still has a lot of fights in him left. I think he is officially the greatest heavyweight of all time now. We have to give him that title, absolutely. I have no problem referring to him as the greatest heavyweight of all time. However, if he goes through a string of losses, he might lose that title, okay? I've seen that happen before. We think this guy is the greatest, he's the best, and then he has a string of losses. I'm not going to name any names. And then we're like, you know what? Maybe we overestimated the guy. Maybe he's not that great. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Miocic stays champion for quite a bit of time here. He's going to keep defending the belt. A lot of you guys are writing me 4-1, 4-1, Stipe. Look, I don't think it's illogical. I don't think it's inconceivable. But you'd have to be generous a little bit. You'd have to be generous. I thought it was too close. Some of the rounds were too close to call. Round four, I can see it. Somebody saying it's Stipe's round. I could see that. I didn't look at the official scorecards. But DC landed a nice right hand at the end, and I was like, you know what? It was so close to that right hand. I give it to Cormier. Again, guys, if you're making me watch it 2-3 more times, I might tell you I give it to Miocic. I would have called, you know what? That round is a draw. Let's call round four a draw. So you have 2-1 for Cormier, for Stipe. If Stipe wins the fifth round, he wins. If Cormier would have won it, it should be a draw. Like I said, I would be happy with a draw, or I'm happy with Stipe winning by a hair. I could see that. But round five wasn't conclusive for me, so it was a tough fight to call. Okay, so a lot of guys are saying, gave the Stipe the fourth round because he was... Hold on a second. He gave Stipe the fourth round because... Oh, I lost it. For us, would you call second round a 10-8? That's from Artyom. You know what? Watch it again. It wasn't a 10-8 round. I'll tell you why. Because I had Cormier winning the round, and then the knockdown wasn't like a knockdown. It was kind of a stumble. You got to watch it again. It wasn't one of those, I touched you and you fell 100% because of the blow. It was like DC was kind of like running along the cage, circling out. And he kind of stumbled and got hit at the same time. No excuses. He got hit. He got dropped. But it wasn't a 10-8 drop for sure. You could give it a 10-8, but I didn't. There's no exact rule. It's not like in boxing where if I drop you, it says extra point. No, it's not like that in MMA. But typically, if you drop a guy, I give you an extra point. Typically. But this is one of those gray areas. I'm not perfectly sure that Cormier got dropped because of the shot. It was hard to call. I gave it a 10-9, and I'm happy with it. Plus, Stipe mounted him, so I have to give Stipe the round. Absolutely. There's no doubt. Stipe won round two. But we watched that fight, man. Till the end, Cormier was jabbing. You hear Crazy Bob Cook calling out, use your speed. And he was. That's exactly what Cormier was doing. Cormier was faster in round two. He was popping that jab beautifully. And you think that, you know, when you see the jab, you know the overhand right is coming sooner or later. And when you're a shorter guy and you're scoring with the jab, let me tell you something. The shorter guys want to throw that missile over the top because taller men, that's their kryptonite. And lo and behold, we're all waiting for it. But then the right hand came from the other side, Stipe. Stipe got the right hand in. But the Cormier jab was on fire. It was on fire that night. It was really something. And round two was popping. And I thought it could win him the day. Sorry for missing that comment. You had something interesting to say, but I only got half of it before it skipped on me. So I'm going to try to... see if I can find it here. Why didn't DC wrestle? That's from Ferdinand. Listen, it's just tough to take Miocic down. Round one, DC had a partial takedown. He shot in on a high crotch. He kind of ran the pipe as Miocic had the guillotine. It's a risk. Does DC want to get rolled over? Does DC want to get tapped with a guillotine? As DC brought him down, Miocic got back up. So it's like, look, can I hold this guy down? You have all these worries, right? And in their second battle, for those of you who remember, DC's corner kept egging him on. Take him down. And he had taken him down a few times in their second fight. In round one, DC took him down. It was poetry, man. He picked him up, slammed him down, got on top of him. It was great. But Miocic is really hard to hold down. And then you have to ask yourself, how much energy did I just spend taking this man down? And he's right back up to his feet. Now, if I take him down and I can hold him down, it would make no sense for me to box with him. But sometimes you can get the takedown, but you can't hold the man down. And in a three-rounder, DC wins. I'm telling you guys, I feel that if they fought three rounds, DC would win. You know why? Because DC would get that takedown, steal those close rounds. But when you know you got an extra 10 minutes to fight, you start thinking, hey, you know what? Let me try to take him down in round four and five. And because if I take him down now, I won't last to four and five. Jones versus Stipe. That's from Steven Shar. Jones versus Stipe. Listen, I'm a big believer in John's abilities. I'm not going to say I'm a big fan here. Okay, he's an old friend of mine. But I'm going to just tell you that I'm a big believer in his abilities. Could he beat Miocic? My answer is yes. He could beat Miocic. I think he's a little quicker than Miocic, and he has great combinations. I think he could beat Miocic. Will he ever do it? I don't know. I don't think the UFC would put him in a position where he could be holding two titles and have a fiasco. I don't know. I don't run behind the scenes. I don't make the calls behind the scenes, but I could see that the organization might have trouble organizing a fight like that. But can John Jones beat a Stipe Miocic? I think it would be 55-45 kind of in John Jones' favor. Absolutely. I think he runs away with it. Why? Because his combinations are going to be something that Miocic is not used to. And John can deal with a boxer quite well. You know, he deals very well with boxers. Okay. Hi, Coach. Why are you not having guests on your podcast? Maybe in the future. Okay, I'm just not organized just yet. I said I would give myself 100 episodes. We're at episode 67. So look for this channel to explode around the 100th episode. What is the best strike for a taller opponent with a longer reach and a more fast twitch muscle fiber? Well, Lewis, that would be probably the jab. You know, tall man with a good jab and a good uppercut is very hard to stop. Tall man with a good jab and a good uppercut and a good 1-2 could be a nightmare. Okay, what else we got here? All right. All MMA pundits losing credit running cover for DC. That's last rights. Well, look, he did beat him once. DC did beat him once. And the second fight, he was doing amazing till he started getting hit to the body. For those of you who don't remember the second fight, in the third round, it was stopped. And the tables turned all of a sudden in Miocic's favor when Miocic started landing these devastating body shots. And that just turned everything around. And we found, like everybody was like, hey, you know, Miocic found the answer. Now, DC's a smart guy. He's going to go back to the drawing board. He's going to prepare for those body shots. Now what's going to happen again? You know, look, this was such a close fight. Nobody should ever look down on either one of these. You know, Trevor Whitman, once we had two fighters fighting each other, and it was so close that after the fight, Trevor told me, he's like, you know what? There was no loser in that fight. And I couldn't agree more. Sometimes there's no loser in a fight, and they just have to pick a winner. This is one of those fights, man. There was no loser in this fight. This fight was really like, it's unfinished business. I can't tell you that Miocic is better than DC. This was like, it was a point thing. It was a point thing. It wasn't like the fight is over. We ran out of time. The fight ran out of time. But I don't know if Miocic would still be standing if this fight was no time limit, for instance. I can't tell you that. I don't know. It was a hard fight. So anybody who picked DC, anybody who picked Miocic, you shouldn't have any, you know, no, nobody should be going after the pundits or all the people who pick DC. DC is a legitimate pick. Always, in any fight. And just, he came up short by a hair, if that. Okay, it's all depends how you interpret the fight. And again, we're using the scoring system, and it's vague, and it's there's interpretation. So for sure, we don't have an exact answer. Cormier got beat bad. Stop making excuses. That's from BNS. No, no, he didn't get beat bad. Absolutely not. That was a great performance by DC. BN, I would love for you to show me a 40-year-old guy who can fight for a world title and with the heavyweight world champion MMA. We have to consider the heavyweight world champion in MMA the toughest guy in the world. We have to, because that's what they used to do in boxing. Whoever was the heavyweight world champion in boxing was considered the toughest guy in the world. Now, I personally would think that I would put Miocic versus the heavyweight boxer any day of the week in a fight, MMA fight. Obviously, it's going to be the MMA guy who's going to win 99 times out of 100. Listen, if you're 40 years old and you're fighting the toughest man on the planet and you're losing by hair, you're phenomenal. Thoughts on the elite side kick to the knee? That's from Lewis Hall. I think that's a great strike. Great strike. Okay, guys, that's it for the fight. Let's move on to Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley had... I'm going to take questions on Sean O'Malley. I saw the fight and that kick to the leg. Let me tell you something. I know... A lot of you might not have seen this. It was kind of weird, right? He got kicked in the leg. He switched stance, and then his foot wasn't working. If you've watched thousands of fights, you'll have seen that before. I've seen it before. I've had in all my years of training fighters. I've been training fighters for 20 years. Professional fighters for 20 years. I know I'm a young person, but MMA was very young when I started. So even though we were training professionally, we didn't know much 20 years ago. We just kind of grew with the sport, you know, because there was no old-time MMA coach. We had boxing coaches, we had wrestling coaches, but there was no MMA coach who'd been doing it for 20 years. The sport just started. I've seen it from, and just in my fighters, twice. Like, it's a rare occurrence, but how many times have I seen it in professional sports? I would say, like, I don't know, maybe a dozen times. It doesn't happen often, but I've seen it before. A guy gets kicked behind the knee, and his foot falls asleep. And he doesn't even know it. He's boxing, he's fighting, and he goes to step, and his heel rolls over. And his foot's flopping around. And he doesn't even notice what's going on. Like, he might figure it out as he's fighting, but it's not like he got kicked in the leg, and the leg kick was so bad that he's in pain. No, the guy's not grimacing. He's just still fighting, but that nerve got hit, and it kind of fell asleep. And I had one fighter get kicked like that. His foot rolled over and he was kind of stumbling, and then it came back to life, and then he knocked his opponent out. I've seen that also. And I've had one fighter get kicked like that, stumble over because his foot's asleep. And after his foot is asleep, he tries to step, falls over, and they stop the fight because they think he's injured or whatnot, and the guy got on top of him or whatnot. Both those fighters that I had that had that issue, after the fight, they walked around like nothing. Their ankle was perfectly fine. Their knee was perfectly fine. There was no bruising. There was no anything. It was like a nerve thing. And I don't know what nerve it is or whatnot, but I've seen it before. Like, for instance, it's happened quite a few times in UFC as well. It happened to Henry Cejudo with Demetrius Johnson, and his foot fell asleep. It actually happened to Demetrius Johnson as well when he fought Miguel Torres. Your foot kind of falls asleep. It's kind of a weird thing. And it it revives back if you give it the time. That's what I've seen. It revives back. I believe it's also happened to I'm forgetting now. But I've seen it before. It happened to Sean O'Malley. Now listen, here's another thing. It could have been a pre-existing injury. Could have been maybe he hurt his ankle weeks before his fight and he didn't want to pull out and he went in there and when he got kicked, he got injured or whatnot. I don't think it was. I think it was one of those weird rarity. You know, it's happened to Sean O'Malley before when he fought early on. He had hurt his leg and he was stumbling and he finished the fight hopping on one foot. So maybe he has a bad leg. Maybe he has an old reoccurring injury. But I've seen that kind of weird thing where your foot falls asleep. And it's because of a kick. That kick worked. It landed. It connected. Marlon wins. Fantastic job. Incredible performance by him. And we have to give him the nod. All right. What else we got here, guys? Oh, Chandler, that's right. It happened to Michael Chandler. That's correct. That's another great example. This time he threw the kick, comes back. He kicked his opponent, didn't grimace, wasn't in pain, was like still fighting, and all of a sudden his foot's asleep and his ankle's rolling over. It's a weird thing, guys, but if you've watched a lot of MMA, you've seen it. You've watched a lot of kickboxing, it's happened. All right, what else we got here? For us, you are cool, bro. Greetings from Holland. When are you going to make a video special over philosophy? That's from Great Faisal. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it. And I love to visit Holland as well. Okay, here. What else we got here? It happened to Henry Cejudo. Yes, it did. All right, what else we got here? DC didn't fight any different after the eye poke. It had zero effect on him. Losing at first or a foot is difficult. Good God gave you two eyes for a reason. That's from Daniel. Daniel, I assume you do zero combat training after reading your comments, my friend. No offense, but honestly, eye pokes do make a huge difference. Now, I want you to do something for me, okay? Have a little experiment. Take a penny and drop it in a cup from about 1 or 2 feet in the air, okay? And then cover one of your eyes and try to drop that penny in a cup, you know, 2.5 feet or 2 feet in the air, from 2 feet in the air. I bet you when you cover your one eye, you won't be able to do it. You won't be able to drop your penny inside the cup. Why? That's how human vision works, okay? When you impede one of your eyes, the depth perception is completely distorted. Unless you have one eye for a prolonged period of time, your brain will adjust. Believe you me when I tell you that when fighters get poked in the eye, they should take the time they need to make sure their vision is back. If you've never been poked in the eye, you might not know that you get double vision, triple vision, your depth perception is off. You see the fighter there, but he feels a little bit further than where he is. There's a lot of tricks your eyes can play on you. You know, your eyes are not perfect. So your eyes are calibrated to have two eyeballs working. Once you have one drop out or one that's obstructed some way somehow, it makes a massive difference. And people always say things like that. They always say things, oh, it doesn't make a difference. Dude, have you ever been poked in the eye? It does make a difference, absolutely. A lot of guys are typing FF. I don't know what that means. Believe you me, Bisping says that. That has nothing to do with what I said. It was just, I don't know. All right, what else we got here? Oh, I got to take one immature guy out of the chat room, put him in a timeout. He's being a little immature. Bisping was crazy to fight with one eye. That's from Tongat. I agree. I don't know how bad his vision was. I assume they gave him a vision test. You know, I know he's injured his eye, but to fight, you have to pass a vision test. So I believe that his eyes were good enough to fight. All right. F means no signal. Well, the signal is green here on my side, guys, so I hope that your feed is working. Oh, F means the stream crash. Well, I apologize for that. I'm connected to high-speed internet, so maybe it's from your end. You are the best coach. Can you share some barbecue channel knowledge with me? I am a white belt right now. By the way, you got my Tim Tam. I got my Tim Tam, and I only regret not getting it sooner. That's from David Jenkins. David, enjoy that Tim Tam. Quick shout out to my sponsors, TimTam.tech, the best massager in the world, high speed, high power, the longest travel, strongest motor, and with heat, the only gun in the world with heat. JujiClub.com, check out my instructional videos. I got 3 instructional videos you will absolutely love. And of course, a Monster Energy drink. Monster Energy drink supporting this channel. Thank you very much. Working fine now. Zero heart from O'Malley. That's from Zuccaria. I totally disagree. The man fell down. His body gave up on him. It was a mechanical issue. He didn't lay down. The guy was trying to fight. Listen, you can't say that men who fight in a cage for a living have no heart. I'm telling you, these guys have the most courage you've ever seen in any sport. There's no sport that requires more courage, more toughness than MMA. There's no sport. It's just no sport. Anybody who says otherwise just has never stepped in the fight. Boxing is scary. Muay Thai is scary. Even jiu-jitsu is, and it's a bit nerve-wracking, you know. Wrestling's nerve-wracking, but fighting MMA is just another level. Why? Because if you fall down, we'll get on top of you. These guys are allowed to elbow you. They're allowed to knee you to the head. Like, I mean, there's some, like, very dangerous attacks that you're allowed to do in this sport. And then, you know, you get a lot of unfortunate comments like that. Like, O'Malley's out there. You know, this is the culmination of his life's training. He's there, and the ball doesn't bounce his way. He gets kicked in a weird way that if he got kicked 100 times, that wouldn't even happen. If he got kicked 1,000 times, that would happen once, what happened to him on that night. Lightning strikes. And look, the guy, you know, the body has limitations. He fell. He didn't throw himself on his back. He didn't give up. He actually kept fighting. He switched hands. Did you guys see what O'Malley did when he got kicked and his foot fell asleep? He doesn't know exactly what's going on. It's happening in the moment. He switched stance immediately. And he was like, hey, what's going on? And he fell. He lost his balance. On the bottom, he didn't give up. He didn't say, hey, I have no leg underneath me. Like, this is crazy that you expect me to keep fighting this way. Not at all. The man kept fighting. He got caught. But the guy has a heart of a lion. No doubt about it. Hey, coach, can you give us information about the TriStar dorms? That's from Lam Tensa. Unfortunately, the TriStar dorms is still closed, and unfortunately, the TriStar gym is still closed. We're doing our best to try to reopen. We have an announcement hopefully soon from the Minister of Health regarding combat sports. Here in Quebec, they have allowed soccer, basketball, and hockey to start again, but unfortunately, they have not a lot of combat sports. Now, what's the difference between hockey and combat sports? You're rubbing up against each other on the boards. You're breathing on one another. You're passing the basketball. They allow basketball. I'm passing the basketball from me to you. You're trying to shield. You're trying to block me from taking a shot. You're up close to one another. You're breathing all over each other. In my opinion, basketball, grappling, there's no difference. You're sweating all over one another. You're touching your face during the game. Your soccer is the same thing. Okay, maybe soccer is a little not as bad, but we're all both chasing the ball. We're in contact with one another. You know, your teammates are sitting on the bench next to each other. You're not social distancing, you know, on the field. In my opinion, it's foolishness. You know, we should come up with some rules for grappling, but and just do it the most secure way possible. But if you're going to allow contact sports like basketball, you should allow jiu-jitsu and boxing. But unfortunately, they haven't given us their statement yet. It should be coming out any day now. They promised that they're going to give us a statement now any day. In my opinion, they're going to do like they did in Toronto. In Toronto, you're allowed groups of 4. So you're allowed to roll with the same 3 guys, you and 3 other guys. So groups of 4 are allowed to roll together, and you're not allowed to roll outside of that group. So imagine you have 20 people. You divide everybody up in 5 groups, and that's your training partner until further notice. What did you think of Weidman's banana split? That's from Armando Solorzano. Great fight by Weidman, by the way. That's actually a really good fight. I would love to have covered it. He did a good job on that banana split. He did a very good job. He didn't get it. For those of you who didn't see the fight, round one was Weidman all over his opponent. I'm forgetting his opponent's name, but he was fighting a monster. Round two, Weidman started to fade. His opponent started taking him down, getting on top of him. And then round three, Weidman rallied back. I was so happy to see him rally back. That was Chris Weidman digging deep and showing why he was a champion in the past. Lots of heart, Chris Weidman. Lots of heart. Lots of intelligence, lots of brains, but also that fight, he showed a lot of heart, rallied back, and got a big win. Beat a very tough guy. Social distancing is distancing from brain. You, what? Show me. We are not mice to hide. Steven, I'm not sure what you're trying to say here, bud. If he can crawl, he can brawl. That's from Free the Mimes. He believes that if you can crawl, you should be able to get hit. Coach, will you make a preview of Israel versus Costa? That's from Ruben. Yes, actually. What's the date on that fight? I'm not even sure, but I know it's coming up on the horizon. That is definitely a fight I want to cover. That is a very exciting fight. I just dropped a cup from a one eye closed, and it went in and bounced out. That's from Robert, get it, whatever. I don't believe you did it. Nah, I don't believe you did it. Steven is anti-mask. Lots of crazy comments today. YouTube people are swamp creatures of the internet. That's from Skylights. Okay, I'm having some lag here, guys. Please forgive me. What else we got here? What else we got here? Can you do the splits? That's from Mysterious. No, I cannot do the splits. No, cannot do this, please, my friend. Coach, what are the best online resources to learn MMA striking on the internet? That's from No Mercy, actually. I'm not sure. You know, you have to Google that. I'm not sure. You know what? If you go on YouTube, there's so many striking tutorials. It's just crazy how many people do tutorials on striking. I've done a few myself. Check them. They're on this channel and kind of shop around. Best submission for a tall guy. Well, tall guys, they usually do triangle, arm triangles, so the leg triangle, of course. Every time you see a tall guy, he's got a great triangle choke. They get so much leverage from those long legs. Like Braulio Estima was the master of triangles, but this guy had incredibly long legs. It was ridiculous. So hard to avoid his triangle. And, of course, all the arm triangles. So Darce, Anaconda, you know, it's just all those chokes. From every position, they're going to score Anaconda and Darce, etc. Again, Braulio Estima is such a great example of that. What else we got here? Is Paulo Costa on roids? That's from Damon Dost. You know, it's very hard for me to say because looking at him, you're like, what the hell am I looking at? Is this a human being? And, you know, I think you have to go back and look at his previous fights, you know, his early days, his early pictures of him when he was younger. Was he always naturally bulky, like jacked and shredded? If he wasn't, it's an indicator he's on steroids. If he, again, this is just my opinion, okay? If he was always shredded, because I've met people that, since they're young, they're ripped. They're just naturally ripped. I've met people like that. They exist. You know, not often, but you see them. But if he wasn't naturally ripped his entire career, his entire, you know, life, I would say it's very likely he uses substance. Okay, what else we got? When will TriStar reopen? Much love from New York. Edison, I talked about that already. We're looking to reopen as soon as possible. We're waiting for the Minister of Quebec, Minister of Health, to give us a new regulation on training. So hopefully that's very soon. Very, very soon. I signed a petition. The Judo Committee made a petition. We're all signing it. We're all trying to push the Health Minister to give us a chance to start training again. Islam Makhachev versus Dos Anjos. Thoughts? That's from Danny Naylor. Is that fight on? If that fight is on, that's another great fight. That's a phenomenal fight. Look, I'm a big believer that Islam is going to win. He's going to make it all the way to the top. So Islam Makhachev is my preliminary pick in that fight. I don't think I will do a whole episode on it. So if you're asking me, I think that Makhachev is just, he's on his way. In your opinion, best striker in the UFC? That's from Connor MMA. Tough fight. Tough to say, but right now I'd have to say Adesanya. I would have to say that Adesanya right now is, in my opinion, number one, pound for pound. It's Oliveira versus Makhachev, or Islam versus. Is it Oliveira versus Makhachev, or is it RDA versus Makhachev? I'm not sure, guys. So I don't know if you're asking me or telling me. It's Makhachev time. All right. What else we got here? How long have we been in? We've been in 38 minutes, guys. Another great episode. But go ahead. Fire away any questions. I'm listening. Thoughts on current day Beneil Dariush? I saw his last fight. He did a great spinning back fist to end the night. He looked crisp. He looked very energized. You know, he had good energy. He didn't slow down. He fought hard round one. Round two came about. Was it done in round one? I can't remember. But I remember seeing him. He was quite explosive the whole way through, and he finished with a beautiful spinning attack. He's looking good. Beneil's looking really good. What else we got here? Okay, we got a super chat. Let's see what it is. No, just a donation. No actual question. Okay, I put one guy in a timeout here. Excuse me. A little bit of immature stuff. Sometimes young kids get in the chat. What are you going to do? Would Khabib beat Adesanya? Pound for pound? Pound for pound fight? I would pick Khabib. Adesanya reminds me a lot of McGregor. You know, his long reach, quickness, you know. Of course, McGregor and him have many differences as well. But I feel that a guy who the wrestling and top game that Khabib brings, if a guy can bring that level of top game and wrestling to the table, it could be a long night, especially in the newer, smaller cage, the 25-foot cage. Again, when I said Khabib versus Adesanya, I'm talking about pound for pound. If theoretically they were the same size. Obviously, Adesanya is a lot bigger. Do you think Cormier will fight again? That's from Y-Bows. I believe he called for his retirement. And, you know, I think he's done enough. You know, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, no doubt. And he's done enough. I think he's going to have a great career as a commentator. He's had a phenomenal career. He's been champion in two divisions. I think it's time to leave with your health. You know, while you still have it, it's a great idea now, I think, for him to end his career. Just end it. It's a phenomenal finish to his career, because that fight was a 50-50 fight. I know there's going to be a lot of naysayers talking, whatever. But at the end of the day, that was a great performance by Cormier. You know, he didn't get the win. That would have been phenomenal. That would have been cherry on the top. That would have been, you know, storybook ending. Oh, excuse me. And no, he didn't get the win, but he put on such a great performance. I think he should be happy with what he's got. What else we got here, gentlemen? Batman versus Superman. That's from Mysterious. Now, I know in the comic book, they've done it before, and Batman wins. Like, he always finds a way to use kryptonite, and he kind of tricks Superman, and he kind of tricks Superman somehow, some way, outsmarts him, and he beats him. Like, I remember reading that long when I was a kid. But I think if it really came down to it and no kryptonite was involved, Superman would just crush him. Whitaker versus Cannonier breakdown. That's from Damon Dost. That's another very exciting fight. I don't know if that's actually signed yet. I know that they were talking about it. But if that fight gets signed, that's going to be a mega fight. If Cannonier wins that fight, and he can, it's going to be a hard one. That will put him in a spot to become a potential world title fight. I mean, that could be huge for Cannonier. If I was Whitaker, I don't know if I'd want that fight. Cannonier is a lot better than his name is. Like, his name is, you know, it's not huge, but his skills are amazing. Like, this guy can be a world champion. Why would you fight a guy who's so dangerous that the common fan doesn't really know yet? He hasn't had that breakthrough popularity fight. Now, don't mix up with the... I'm not talking about his skills now. His skills are top notch. But his brand is not there yet. But Whitaker's brand is very developed. So why wouldn't you fight another guy? If you're going to fight a crazy hard fight, you know, you got to get something out of it. Because if Whitaker beats him, people are going to be like, oh, we don't even know that guy that he beat. Why should Whitaker get another title shot? Who's that guy that he beat? He'd have to beat somebody with a more prestigious name. Cannonier is coming. Like, there's no way he's going to become a mega star because his skills are legit. He just hasn't had that popularity fight, that fight that makes him so popular. This is the fight for him. If he beats Whitaker, he'll become super popular. And I know you hardcore fans all know Cannonier, but the regular guy doesn't know him. So Whitaker has a lot more to lose in this fight. What do you think about Gaethje saying he needs 4 leg kicks to compromise Khabib? Poirier took over 30 and still managed to knock him out. That's from Ali Akbar. Listen, I don't think that Khabib only takes 4 leg kicks. I don't think so. Now, Gaethje kicks super hard. He kicks super often. And he punches really hard. He's got a lot of power in those kicks. But when you kick super hard, you could also get taken down quite badly. So, if you kick Khabib's leg and you get taken down, you better have incredible get-up game or jiu-jitsu. Like, it's not good, not great, stellar. And I don't think that's the case with Gaethje. I have a feeling that if Khabib gets on top of him, like, I'm telling you, I might do a breakdown of this fight, and I'm picking Khabib right now, okay, officially. If you guys want to do a breakdown about it in the future, let me know in the comments. I'll probably do it. I'm probably going to do it just because this is going to be such a popular fight. But I'm giving you my pick right now. I'm thinking 60-40 Khabib. 65-35 Khabib. I love Gaethje. You know, I love Trevor Whitman. I love their duo. I think they're both phenomenal team. But I think Khabib's going to get that takedown. And when he gets on top, the differential is going to be massive. That's my opinion. Yes, please stop spamming. I have to put you in timeout. You guys, please do not pollute the chat area. I don't mind you guys reposting your questions so I can see it. That's fine, but just don't spam. Like, don't go like full berserker. I like Justin too, but he can't handle Khabib at all. That's from Prince Vegeta. I don't want to say he can't handle Khabib. Like, he brings so many things to the table. Gaethje's a crisp puncher. Amazing counter-punching. Incredible durability. Tremendous heart. But we've never seen him really get taken down. We've never seen him go on the ground. I have a feeling that He's a good wrestler, yes. He's not easy to take down. But Khabib is taking down the hardest guys. Like, he's the guys who are hardest to take down. He's taking them down, with the exception of one. I mean, it was only one of his fights that was all stand-up. I think he gets the takedown. And if he gets it, which he will, in my opinion, his ground game is stellar. It's not good. Khabib's ground game is an A++. Greetings for us. What catastrophe do you predict to try to rematching Tony versus Khabib? Yes, Arjun. If Tony versus Khabib is booked again, we might have a second pandemic. We might have something else. This fight was meant to never be. Coach Faraz doesn't know anything about Dragon Ball. LOL. That's very true. I know nothing about Dragon Ball. Thoughts on the Moroccan Youssef Zalal? That's from Ishmael. Ishmael, I like, I think he's very talented. I saw some of his fight. I was there that night that he fought, and he performed beautifully. He's very explosive, very technical guy, and I'm sure we're going to see him a lot in the future. What is the biggest misconception in philosophy? That's from Era. Era, that's a great question. I would say the definition of truth. Like, I blame the school system. When you go to school, they tell you this is true, this is not true, this is true, this is not true. But they never define what is true, because in philosophy, you get into epistemology, how we know things, and all of a sudden, it's a very slippery subject. How do we define what is true? Now, many great thinkers have tried, and it's a very complicated subject. And there are many explosively massive misconception on what is something. What can we call true? And it's just a crazy topic. Now, I remember one podcast where Sam Harris and Jordan Peterson get into it. They're trying to define what is true. And they both have this different definition. Now, the weird thing about this, hearing this podcast, you have Jordan Peterson, very intelligent guy. Sam Harris, two super intelligent guys. But they don't agree on what the word true means. Now, Peterson's saying, look, he's a pragmatist. This is what we call pragmatism in philosophy. He's pragmatic. If something is useful to you, it's true. That's it. That's all we care about. We don't want to know anything else. If it works... If boiling this thing at 100 degrees Celsius disinfects this product, it worked, I didn't die, that's true. And Sam Harris is saying, no, that's not the correct definition of truth. He's using correspondence theory, even though they didn't give us the key terms. These are very popular topics in philosophy. Okay, there are three major schools of thought on what is true. Now, I'm not telling you there's only three. There are three major schools. The first one is pragmatism. If it's true, it works. Excuse me. If it works, we consider it to be true. We don't care about anything else. Don't go any further than that. That's what we call like knowledge of the stomach. You know, did it get my stomach full? It worked. I don't care. I'm with it. And Harris is like, no. Truth is what corresponds to reality. This is called correspondence theory. Now, he didn't put it this way. I'm just telling you what corner he's in. He's in the corner of correspondence theory. If I say there's a glass on the table, I have to go check and look. If there's a glass on the table, then it's true. It corresponds to my experience out there in the world. Now, there's problems with correspondence theory. As a longtime philosopher, I can tell you there's problems with correspondence theory, and there are problems with Jordan Peterson's position, the pragmatic position. Like, for instance, it's 12 o'clock. The clock is pointing at 12 o'clock. The clock works. It's 12 o'clock. It's giving me the right time. It's useful to me. It works. But then you find out that clock broke 2 days ago at 12 o'clock. There's an instance where something is useful to you. And it worked. It gave you the right time, so to speak. Not the clock. The clock is not functioning, but it was functional in terms of use. And yet it's wrong. It's untrue. That clock is not working. The statement, this clock is working, is untrue. Now, we can split hairs, guys. I believe that truth is a little bit too complicated to talk about today, but there's also a third. I said there were three major schools of thought. The third one is coherence. If your story is coherent, I'll believe it to be true until I find something that contradicts your story or your statement. Now, coherence theory might seem like the weaker of the three, but it's actually not. It was actually quite popular in, I would say, the 80s and 90s, coherence theory. I think that coherence theory, correspondence theory, and pragmatism, they all have a hand in the truth. You have to have all these three and more, but I'm not going to go into the more because it's crazy complicated. But I remember this Sam Harris conversation with Jordan Peterson. I was kind of laughing, and I'll tell you why I was laughing, because their conversation was, it's one that happened over thousands of years. Like, the Greeks talked about this 2,500 years ago. They had these same arguments. The Muslim Empire had the same arguments during the Golden Age. The Enlightenment period, they had the same argument. The Europeans had the same arguments, the same back and forth. What is true? And it was just, now in our modern time, you have these two guys, and you can see Sam Harris getting really upset because he's like, no, it has to be correspondence theory. But it's like almost like Sam Harris won't accept that there are other competing theories that have some problems, but not more than correspondence theory. Sam Harris's position also is known in through, if you ask 100 PhD experts on epistemology, they're going to tell you correspondence theory is not perfect. It's not perfect. We have problems with correspondence theory. It's really, really good. It's very, very useful, but it also has its problems. Now, you know, Sam Harris was like, I remember this one argument they put up. Peterson was like, how was that argument again? They were talking about odd and even number of hairs. Sam Harris says, look, do you have an odd or even number of hairs? It can't be both. It's not interpretable. You either have an odd or even number of hairs on your head. If I count your hairs and you have 101 hairs, let's say you're going bald, okay? And let's you have 101 hairs. Peterson's going to be like, hey, I'll believe it if it's useful to me that I have 101 hairs on my head. He's a pragmatist, don't forget. And Harris is saying it's regardless whether you have 101, regardless whether it's useful to you or not, you have to believe it. We count that it's a matter of fact, as they would say in philosophy, as David Hume would say. Which one do you believe? Well, me personally, I'd say, look, let's count the hairs. But a guy like Peterson's going to say something like, you might have miscounted. That one hair that you counted, I don't consider that a hair or whatnot. Now, what's your definition of hair? And he's going to give us a great definition of hair, that not every hair you counted is agreed upon, and et cetera. And it's not wrong. It's not wrong per se. So, you know, oftentimes Jordan Peterson's position will be referred to as sophistry. Very famous Greeks. Many famous Greeks were referred to as sophists. They're like, hey, man, it's all how you interpret it. It's all how you twist the facts and make them work for you. Now, personally, I'm not a sophist at all. Plato, Socrates, they despise the sophists, actually. They despise them immensely. And in one of the books of Gorgias, which Sam Harris has to go back and read, because if he wants to serve Jordan Peterson's argument, the death blow, he would have to understand the book of Gorgias. Where the book of Gorgias, Socrates basically tells the sophists, Gorgias was the most famous sophist, and now Socrates is talking to one of Gorgias's. In the book of Gorgias, he's speaking to one of Gorgias's top students, and he's saying, look, is it a fact that everything is interpretable? Is it a fact that there are no facts? So now the sophist is stuck. If he says yes, now he's admitted to a fact, to something that's absolutely true. And if he says no, then he's just negated his beliefs. So Socrates kind of pinned him there. He kind of twisted his arm and broke it. And he actually breaks it in another way, which is maybe a little too complicated. But basically, I had one time, I was giving a lecture at a company once, not about fighting, but about like the mind, etc. And one girl asked me after the lecture, she said, do you believe that all truth is relative, or is truth absolute? Meaning, is something out there in the world actually true, regardless of what you think about it? It's actually out there. And I said, yes. Because if you say everything is relative, that itself is an absolute truth. So now you've contradicted yourself. It's a what we call in philosophy a self-defeating position. It's a self-defeating position to say everything is relative. That would mean that even that statement you made is also relative, meaning that it's not necessarily true. So you kind of, you're in a self-defeating argument. But that is a story for another day. You took me on a mega left turn. Okay, guys, with that said, I want to thank you all for tuning in, and I'll see you all in the next episode. Thank you.